This is a replay of the Tuesday night, June 2nd, WGN show. We started right after the Stanley Cup playoffs, probably around 10:15. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, endless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number for One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have almost 3 hours to spend together tonight, and if it's on your mind, I'll make sure that it is on mine. A number of things to talk about, thanks to links from wonderful engineer Bob and from James on the South Side and everybody else. Actually, James sent me some stuff he was thinking might be good for Monday Night Trivia, some of which he very well may be right, some of which probably too widely known, but there was one that I came across of his list, and I'd seen it before. I knew the answer, but it's still absolutely mind-boggling to me, and that is, you are more likely to be killed by a vending machine than a shark. Now, of course, in both cases, but certainly in the vending machine, you kind of have to be involved yourself in causing the event to happen. Maybe not so much with sharks, but definitely the vending machines. What it is, as you probably know, they tip over. A lot easier than many people would believe. And apparently there are, from vending machines, on average in the last, 50 years or so, 2.18 fatalities per year. Yeah, 113 injuries caused by the machines tipping over. And and apparently the risk of dying from a vending machine is 1 in 112 million, so I wouldn't stay awake at night. And again, you kind of got to be shaking it for it to happen. But as far as sharks, 1 in 250 million, meaning vending machines are twice as deadly as sharks. And that's probably true if you eat the contents in most cases, but maybe more so, actually, than tipping it over. By the way, of course, I probably don't have to say it, but the vending machine deaths were 100% human-caused. Yeah, and it's the fact that they tip. But we've all been there. I've never actually tried to shake one, but I have been mad. I think I punched a few of them, at least, when you put in your hard-earned coins and you don't get your item. You know, it doesn't fall off the spool or whatever it is. And yeah, you want to take things into your own hands. Don't tip them. All right, so there you go. That's my advice for tonight. After that, I'm completely out of advice. 888-876-5593. So as you can see, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. Nick is in Baltimore. What's up, Nick?
Hey, Robin. Good evening. I wanted to drop in just for a couple minutes. I wanted to talk, do some radio stuff real quick.
Okay.
All right. I bought a new radio, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's at DX286.
Ah, what do you think of it?
It's a great radio. It's really super sensitive. I can pull stuff out of the ether that I can't do with other radios. In fact, listening to GN coming in on that, I can. You know, we're into spring and getting into summer now, and it's usually harder to get GN. It's coming in, so it's in, you know, across the AM band, and it's really selective.
Nice.
The only problem I have in this back bedroom where I am is they must have done something, when I say they, Verizon, because the Fios is like really strong and the noise floor is really high and the FM is just hashy, but my signals that I broadcast are fine. But the FM, it's like if I walk out of the room, the FM lights up like a Christmas tree. So it's all the computer and then stuff I have in here.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting little radio. And I've seen them. And, of course, it was based on the SR-286, which was based on a chip that was designed for car radio use, which, of course, you got to like that. But I'm glad you mentioned it because it's Quodesen, Quodesen. What the heck is Quodesen?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the manufacturer. They say it right on the user manual, and they say it right on the radio. And so I'm thinking, you know.
I assume it's Chinese, right? I mean.
Well, but who makes? Yeah, I'm like, who are these people? Because I must admit that other than the when the SR-286 came out, that was the first time I ever heard of it.
You know how I found out about this radio? I watched this guy, and he's out of Los Angeles. His name is Shango. His YouTube thing is Shango 066.
Yeah.
But he repairs TVs and radios. Apparently he's an engineer of some type. But he's really a great guy, and he always repairs stuff. And he mentioned it because he did a couple of DX videos. He does a lot of them, actually. And I wrote in, and I, well, what was that radio you talked about? And he wrote back, and he said, it's the Quodesen, you know, DX-286.
Yeah.
That's where I first found out about it, and I had to have it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. While we're talking, I looked it up. No surprise, Guangdong, China. That's where that stuff seems to be coming from now. But this was the part I found really interesting, was that the designer had worked for Redson Texan and handled the OEM designs for Eaton and for Seacrane. So I thought that was very interesting. So yes, and of course, as I say, that automotive chip, and that's probably what what the guy you heard in L.A. was talking about, Shango, that TEF-6686 chip, and that's really nice. Okay,
it's got a lithium battery in it, which is you can replace it.
Right.
You know, it has like a flap. You can open it up. And so I forget. I guess it's a 5-volt. I don't know what it is. But, you know, it's a USB. You know, you charge it with a USB.
Right.
It's a mini USB. It's a mini to an A.
Okay.
You know, USB.
Yeah, I think it's a 3.7. I think it is. And it's got to be button top, because if you use the flat top, it's not going to make the contacts. So that's the deal there. And I didn't know you could recharge them. You can replace them, obviously, very easily. And probably that's the easiest thing to do with that. But absolutely, you want it to be battery operated, because, of course, if you're DXing, AC is your enemy.
Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing little radio, especially on AM.
Well, neat.
FM is good, too, because I can pull... I'll tell you what I get on this radio on the FM side that I don't get on the other radios. I get BAL's translator.
Oh, okay.
And CBM's okay. Translator comes in at 99.9, but 101.5 is hard to get here. And they're only 136 watts are directional.
Yeah.
But I get them on this radio, so...
And it's pocket size, so you can take it with you wherever you're going.
Yep.
Which is neat.
Yep. Yeah,
neat.
It's really, really great. And so I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Still no news on BT.
No, that's the strangest thing. I know. It's downright demoralizing.
Yeah. But one more thing I wanted to mention. Back in the day when ITH FM was sold and they became B-104.
Right.
When Scripps bought it.
Right.
They brought in Joel Denver, who really put together a really nice sounding station. So the GM fired Joel Denver and brought in another PD, and of course the other PD stripped the station of all the jingles and wouldn't let the jocks talk over the intros or anything. And he put in something called Top Tracks Radio, which is like, I guess, an AOR-sounding top 40 thing. Mm. I don't know.
I don't either. Yeah, I remember that Joel was there at BSB. He was in a lot of the top 40 stations like KSLQ and KCBQ, you know, the Bartels, NYQ in Miami, or maybe it was MJX by the time he was there, but I think it was NYQ. But FIL in Philly, he was a Philly boy.
Yep. Yeah. But he was a great, I mean, the station sounded great when he was there. But when MAR FM won Hot Hits, Jan Jeffries split, and they brought in Steve Kingston, and of course he flipped B-104 back, Kingston flipped it back to being a real station.
Yeah.
And they went to number one. And had Brian O'Brien and all those.
Yeah, no, they did very well. I think that Joel got his start, actually, in Rockville at Winks.
Did he?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure it was like 1968. He was at PGC after that, but I think he started at Winks when he was a teenager.
Wow, that's quite Richard Eaton again.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yes, and everybody and their brother worked at Winks at some point or other.
Interesting company, some great radio stations along the way, and some great people that worked at those stations that really wanted to do good radio.
Oh, yeah.
And sadly, a number of them are gone now, but
virtually all of them are out of the business, obviously. If they're retired, that's one thing, but a number of people weren't voluntarily retired, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. But interesting times, so I thank you for that. And
good stuff. Yeah, well, the Quotisyn DX286, and it's not terribly expensive too. You might have just convinced me.
No, it's not. It's not expensive at all.
Exactly. So I might have to get a hold of one of those.
Yeah. It's not a bad set.
All right. Good deal. Well, thanks for the tip, and always good to hear from you.
Hey, thanks, Rolly. Thanks for the show.
All right, appreciate it. Yeah, an automotive chip, that's enticing all the way around. Now, of course, you know, when you're listening at home, you don't have your car around you. So, I mean, some of the reasons that your car radio sounds so good have nothing to do with that. But at the same time, that's a nice thing to include. Marty is in Whiting. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Good evening, Rolly. How are you doing tonight?
All right, how about your bad self?
I can't complain at all, so.
Good.
But I need to bring something up to you.
Okay.
Last night, early in your show, I don't know, I forgot his name, and when you guys got done talking, you mentioned his name. It's like, one of our younger callers. Hell, Rolly, I'm only 63.
All right. Well, you're still on the younger side.
And when I first talked to you, I told you I got a healthy sense of humor, so I'm just teasing you.
Okay. Yeah.
But the reason I'm calling, you'll never believe who was talking about you Sunday morning about 1:45 from WGN.
Who?
Steve and Johnny.
Oh, well, I love Steve and Johnny. Okay, if you're going to say Wolfman Jack, I'm going to say that must have been a really long time ago. But oh, yeah. Well, that's great.
And they spoke very highly of you. And the reason your name even came up, Lionel went to working weekends only anymore.
Yes.
And he's happy working weekends.
Yeah.
But I heard him Saturday morning, and I couldn't sleep Sunday morning. So I turned on WGN, and it's like, well, who's these people? I'd never heard of them before. So they said, we're going to have one last caller before 2 a.m., and if we like, it's a random call, and you could win something.
Yeah.
So I call up, and Johnny says, where do you live at? I said, Whiting. And they're like, hell, we're going to be in Munster here in about another hour or so. So we get talking, and I said, hey, why is Lionel not on Sunday mornings?
Yeah.
And I think I know now why. Well, Steve explained a little bit, but that's their time. That's their show. I guess they only do one show
right,
a week.
Right. They're great.
And so one thing led to another. I mentioned Raleigh, you know, and the guy up, his name is, Walter Sterling.
Oh, yes.
He took over
It's Walt's,
Lionel's spot.
Right, it's Walt Sabo. He's a old radio guy, sort of consultant, if you will. Yeah.
And I told Johnny and Steve, I said, nothing against him. I said, I'm not in all that conspiracy stuff and UFO stuff. So now I can only hear Lionel once a week. But then Johnny offered to come over to my apartment and drop me off a tuna and quiche sandwich.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I said, real men don't eat quiche. Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So then Steve, he mentioned how him and Johnny got acquainted with you. They were going to Palm Beach and scanning the dial like we've all done that, you know. And they came across you, and I don't know how long ago it was, but they said, and she knows who we are. It's like, well, I can believe that.
Oh, no, of course. Well, you know, a good friend of mine is no longer alive, Eddie Schwartz, Chicago Schwartz, did that overnight show. And then after that, Steve and Johnny took over, and I thought they were just terrific. And I can't tell you how often I'd listen to that. And I think one of the real bonehead moves was when they got rid of them. And, of course, now at this stage of their life, I don't think they'd want to do it full-time, just like I don't want to do it full-time. But I'll take as much as I can get of them. I think they are just terrific.
What little bit I listened to.
Yeah, you'll like them.
I really did. And you can tell they're down-to-earth people. And I didn't real. They talked maybe, I don't know, for maybe 10 minutes before I finally called in. But I asked the screener, I said, are they married? He goes, oh, yeah, they're married.
Oh, yeah.
But you know how long they've been doing that show on Sunday mornings then? Any idea?
Well, I don't know when it came back. I'm pretty sure that Sean Compton was behind it, but I think that it left in, I think it was like 2011 is when they left. Yeah, they listened to me when they were driving, when I was on XM, when they were driving down to Florida where they have a place, for the winter and stuff like that. And I was honored that they did. But, you know, this is good company because Steve and Johnny, man, they held their own. And we're talking against Franklin McCormick and Eddie Schwartz. So they're just class act. And both were in radio. That's how they met each other. And, Steve King was on a number of stations, WLS, and he also, I was at WIBC in Indianapolis, and so was he. We didn't run into each other there because it was a few years different, but then he went back to BBM-FM and then to LS, and that would have been about 73 maybe, and then he was on IND, and for a minute there he was on DAI, and so I think, but it was at IND where he met Johnny.
Okay.
So that's
so they've been together. They've been married many, many years, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Well, I think that they went to WGN like the start of 85. And I think Johnny was, she was doing traffic on the morning show, I'm pretty sure. And he was doing something else. But anyway, they ultimately did segue into overnights. And it became, after Eddie left, it became huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell by the personalities I'll be listening to them.
Oh, yeah.
Being retired and a night owl anyways. And Saturday, they weren't sure what time they were going to come on because of the hockey game.
Right, exactly.
So I'll make sure to listen throughout the day, early evening. Well, the hockey game's at 7, so I don't know if they'll be on right after. But I really enjoyed their show. Of course, I am biased because they're going to send me a T-shirt, WGN T-shirt.
No, that's great. I'll tell you, they used to have Les Paul on a lot, and those were great shows. And after they left GN at that point, they wrote a book on it, A Little More Less. So that's out there. But I guess it was, around 2013, 2014. But bottom line is that I'm sure that Sean Compton was behind it because he was a fan, as was I. And Steve was sick for a while. They didn't know what was wrong with him. And it turned out it was a gluten intolerance. And
wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, once you can identify it, you can treat it. And from what I understand, he's doing much better. And, of course, he's involved with organizations which are fighting the disease that not enough people realize is probably something that could be bothering them. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Les Paul.
Yeah.
You mean the radio Les Paul, not the guitarist?
No, I mean the guitarist Les Paul.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm a Les Paul fan.
Okay, well.
And Mary Ford.
All right. Well, absolutely. Well, yeah, Les Paul, the two shows he used to be on all the time, he was on with Steve and Johnny, and he was on WOR with Joey Reynolds. And yeah, they and they're some of the, you know, some of the best best shows ever. So they're probably, I would bet they're on YouTube. I haven't ever tried, but I would bet. But yeah, Les Paul, the Les Paul, and they wrote a book about it.
Wow, boy, what a small world.
Yeah,
I'm a guitar fan, anyways. Rock and roll, blues, little jazz here and there.
Okay,
and but yeah, that's pretty interesting. Well, I'll make sure to, when I call in Saturday, when I find out when they'll be on, I'll make sure to let them know that I talked to you.
Yeah.
And I again, to be repetitious, they spoke very, very highly of you, especially your knowledge.
Well, sentiments 100% returned, and give them my best.
I will.
All right, thanks.
Yep, bye, Raleigh.
All right, so we will find out what's going on in the world at large. Then we've got Mike, we've got Chris, we've got Cindy, and I was going to say there's a line available. Yes, there is. Right now there's one line available for you. Take it while you got it. 888-876-5593, WGN Radio.
It's the end of a story. That I thought was so sincere. No use to pretend now, it's really the end now, and I shed many a tear. It's the end of a love song, the end of a dream that we both had planned to share. It's just friend to friend now, it's really the end now, because you no longer care. The chapter of our love was such a thrill to live.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, it was released as Jimmy Beaumont, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Skyliners are backing him. I'm not sure. That was on Colpix, of course, Jimmy Beaumont, former lead singer of the Skyliners, in many of their incarnations, actually, including, of course, all the hits. And it was last week that Stan in Dearborn had suggested I play it, and I completely forgot about it, and that was written down, so now he's heard it, if he's listening anyway. And, yeah, Colpix, which was really, the Skyliners, it was pretty much it. Later, Art LeBeau got rights to the label. But that was Lenny Martin, and he just kind of gave up in about 1960. And so Colpix picked up the Skyliners and did that release. Now they were on a number of other labels, Jubilee and others as well. So 888-876-5593, 8888, Raleigh. Cindy is in Chicago. What's happening tonight, Cindy?
Yeah, I have a request. I heard it on MeTV radio.
Oh God!
It's one of my that's a good station. They've been playing a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. But Baby, It's You.
Which version?
The one I don't know.
Okay, all right. Well, you've got choices there.
The one from, like, the 60s or the 50s, whatever.
Well, Burt Bacharach actually wrote it, but you had Smith who did it later. I don't know what they play, or who was it originally, the Shirelles? The Shirelles did it first. That was 1961, and then Smith did it later. But okay,
the woman, I love that song.
All right,
it's cool. And then the other thing is I had my mammogram today, and Chuck's niece works at Lutheran, and so she met me, and we talked, we hashed out everything. Okay. And then one of the, we had, you know, we talked about everything. Chuck's niece met me before my mammogram.
All right.
So well. She works at Lutheran. She's a practical nurse practice. She's way up there, I guess, but she has her own office and everything.
Oh, wow. How about that? All right. Well, very good. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that will come out well, and it'll be just routine, and we'll get maybe a T1 for you.
And my diabetic diet is going real good. I have a lot. You know, I've been on it for about 3 weeks now, I think it is. But the thing is, when Chuck passed away, I forgot, and then I moved, I forgot what I'm supposed to eat. I don't know why that happened. It's from just the stress. I just don't remember. You know, and now they have, you know, friends and family have me, you know, and I have a book I have to read.
Okay.
And I have so much more energy now, and my depression is gone.
Isn't that nice?
I wouldn't believe something like that.
Food is uber important, and we are all in denial about that. That's why I've said when I get to talk to God at some point afterwards, I hope so anyway, I want to pick one bone with him, because that's, if they have to put us in a body and we have to wear these meat suits for 70 years or whatever, at least I should be able, the things that I want to eat should be the things that are good for me. Now, unfortunately, they're not. It's the things I don't want to eat that are good for me. But when I do it, I feel much better.
But, you know, the thing about it is I'm supposed to have 2 boiled eggs for breakfast. And I like the boiled eggs.
Well, then that's great.
But then I was resisting, and, like, I was, like, friends and family telling me that because, like, from my generation, eggs were like a no-no.
Those were just idiots who thought that the food you ate would be your cholesterol levels. No, hopefully they've gotten some brains since then.
Yeah, that's all gone.
Yep. It's more genetic than anything. But, yes, the whole egg thing.
I have the genetic from my father's side of the family with the cholesterol, and then bipolar medicine causes elevated cholesterol. It was like, now it's like 212, and she wanted me on 40 milligrams to get it down more, and then it was like 338, and that's from bipolar meds.
Well, there you go. Yeah, isn't it nice? You take medicine to counteract what other medicine you're taking or doing to you. Sounds like a bad equation to me, but that's allopathic medicine these days. All right, thanks, Cindy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Yes, baby, it's you. We'll be coming up. I will. And the Shirelles version, not Smith. All right, why not? Ken in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, with Steve and Johnny, I grew up a couple blocks away from when they first got married in Martyrs Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Eddie Schwartz lived close by to me at Irving and Lakeshore Drive in a high rise.
Okay.
And at nighttime, there used to be a guy, he was a teacher at University of Chicago, Milt Rosenberg.
Oh, of course, yes. Oh, man, I've told the story many times. The first time I heard Milt Rosenberg, it was much earlier on his career. Well, he was talking, obviously it's historical, but all I heard was Muslims and 7-Eleven. I wasn't thinking of the years. I'm like, yeah, they're in every convenience store. And then I realized, oh, no, he's talking about the year 7-Eleven. So, yes, that was a Milt Rosenberg exposure.
Yeah, I too listened to Nighttime.
Yeah.
And Steve and Johnny were all about guitar, especially Les Paul.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And they would take requests.
Yes.
And I called up and asked them if they could play. I heard them play it a couple of weeks before.
Uh-huh.
Southern Pacific, I Go to Pieces.
Okay.
They sing a cappella.
Yes.
The group. He liked it.
Good.
He played music and stuff, and they were just great. Yeah, when they just got married, I think in the late 70s, they just lived a couple blocks from me.
That's great.
Yeah. You know, if you could play that one song, I Go to Pieces.
by
Southern Pacific.
I get it. Okay. I have to look for that.
Yeah, it's the group Southern Pacific.
Okay.
And I like to talk longer, but I got to get up for mammogram.
Oh, yeah.
I got to pick up a dozen eggs.
Let me know how that works out for you.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Right. Dozen eggs, and I forget what else.
Yeah, right. That's good. It's for the best.
Yeah, and Cindy, if she came down from 3-something to 2-something, that's good.
I guess.
She should keep working.
All right.
She should keep working on it.
All right. Yeah, I just don't look at the numbers. All right.
If you look, and like, yeah, allopathic medicine, you call it?
Allopathic, yes.
That's allopathic,
what it, yeah. That's what it is. That's what allopathic MDs today are beholden to drugs. It's all about what drug can treat this. And I don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah, you go into whatever doctor, psychiatrist. He goes, oh, I got to write your prescription.
Yeah,
you got
right.
15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then see me in 4 weeks. Come back in 4 weeks. Yeah, but I got a side effect of that.
Yeah.
Ah, I got another medicine you got to take
right.
for that side effect.
I'll tell you what.
See me in 4 weeks. I come back in 4 weeks. I go, I got that medicine you gave me for the side effect of the first medication is giving me side effects. Ah, oh, let's put you on a third one.
Right.
Then you come back 4 weeks later. Let's clean the slate and put you on a new one. And you start all over again.
Yeah, don't check your liver enzymes after all that, because your liver is going to go south pretty quickly after that cocktail. So, all right.
Well, when you do a regular blood and urine analysis twice a year, because you're taking drugs and the liver processes it, and it's automatically checked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, with mine. But anyways, I like to talk longer, but I got to get up for an appointment.
Yes, you do. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. And I'd like to talk longer, too, and I will, to David and Chris and Mike and James and you, hopefully. You can call. Let me release that line so you can call. All right, because six at a time is all I can juggle on this phone system. But that gives you a line available right now. But I want to talk about the Sea Crane Company. And this is interesting because I had asked him to send me another CC Wi-Fi 3 because John likes his so much in the Scottsdale studio. We wanted one here. And he got it yesterday, actually, while I was doing something else. And he's like, you got to help me. I said, oh, figure it out. It's intuitive. And he did. And so within minutes, he was listening to my show and just happy as can be. The beauty of the CC Wi-Fi 3, well, there's several things that make it just terrific. But one of them is how easy it is to use. There's no apps to download. There's no microphone. There's no ads on the screen. There's no monthly fees. And it really is, as I say, intuitive. You get thousands and thousands of streams, radio stations, podcasts, and everything. And I'll tell you what. Sound is great on this radio. It's a lot better than your smartphone. That goes without saying. And yeah, and even if you normally listen on the radio, which, hey, I love AM and FM, but how about eliminating all the static and drifting and everything else? Well, that's what will happen. You know, I always talk about Bob Crane because he should be knighted because he brought real selectivity back to radio where the reception of the Sea Crane radios are just terrific. But it's interesting because I always talk about the reception of the CC Wi-Fi. People say, what? It's not a radio. Well, here's the reception. You probably have a little wireless router or a wireless access point in your house, and you know some things connect fairly easily and maybe some things not so easily. Well, the CC Wi-Fi 3 will connect to even the most lackluster Wi-Fi, will give you a signal in other places where other items probably won't get anything. It pulls in a really good Wi-Fi signal. Obviously, you can't be down the block, and there's some line of sight involved in all that to a degree, but the bottom line is that if anything can pick it up, if you've got the wireless router or wireless access point, this radio is just a terrific complement. It sounds great, and you will never be without something that you want to hear, and again, so easy to use. So go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. And you can give them a call. You can order by phone, too. But if you have any questions at all, that's the beauty of the Sea Crane Company. They'll walk you through it. They'll hold your hand, and they'll make sure that you know exactly what you're doing. But you probably won't need them. It's just a great addition, and we're so pleased that it's in this studio, too, now. So the CC Wi-Fi 3, if you can go to ccradio.com, do it. ccradio.com. Look at that CC Wi-Fi 3 or give them a call at 800-522-8863. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
It's not the way you smile that touch my heart.
Sha-la-la-la-la.
It's not the way you kiss that tears me apart. Whoa, oh, many, many nights roll by. What can I do? I can't help myself. When baby, it's you. Baby, it's you.
Sha-la-la-la-la.
You should hear what they say about you. Cheat, cheat.
Sha-la-la-la-la.
They say you've never, never, never been true. Oh, doesn't matter what they say. I know I'm gonna love you any old way. What can I do when it's true? I don't want nobody, nobody more. Baby, it's you. Baby, it's you.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So there it is, 1962 on Scepter. There is Cindy's request. You say it, I play it. Well, usually when I can remember. 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. Mike is in Elmwood Park. What's happening, Mike?
Oh, my wife, I talked to you about 2 weeks ago. She was going for therapy for her vertigo.
Yeah, and how's it going?
It was going good. They actually used a massager on the back of her neck.
Okay.
They gave her, like, a warm blanket, and then they had her, like, walk a little bit.
Okay.
And they watched, and then they had her lay down. When she rolled to her right side, she was fine, but when she rolled to her left side, that's when she got dizzy.
Right. Well, that's what I said before. You can find out pretty quickly.
Yeah. So she's got, like, 6 more sessions to go. She's already did 2. They programmed it for 8.
Okay.
And from what I understand, then they'll evaluate her after that, and
sure,
they'll go from there.
Sure. Well, good.
So I'm hoping something happens, you know, where they kind of can find out what's going on, because it drives me nuts.
Oh, yeah. And it can come and go. As I mentioned, I had it for whatever, I was 5 years or so, and it would come in bouts, you know, not all the time. And there were times I thought, oh, well, I'm over this. Yeah, right, until the next day when whammo. So it can certainly oscillate this that way. But the big thing is she knows what she's got, and she knows that it's benign. So basically it's an inconvenience rather than a worry.
Right. You know, and I used to listen to speak of Eddie Schwartz. I used to listen to him on WIND back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he was a reason I knew him in 1970 when Robert W. Morgan did mornings there for a year. Eddie was a very young Eddie Schwartz, under 21 at the time, I think, was his producer.
Now, do you remember the guy that he replaced, Larry the Legend Johnson?
Well, yeah, of course. He's no longer with us.
No, I know. You know, I had one of his... What did he have? He had a club called the In Resident Coup Club, if I'm not mistaken.
All right.
I still got his card that he sent me.
Yeah.
No, he was good, too. And then, like I say, with Schwartz, Schwartz used to run a dating on Fridays. Once in a while, he'd run a dating service.
Yeah, Desperately Dateless,
I actually got a date off his radio.
Really? Really? And
yes.
And you're alive to tell about it. All right.
Yeah, but I didn't marry the girl that I went out with the first time.
Okay.
No, she, there was something wrong there.
Yeah,
I wanted to go into it.
Yeah.
But, he was good, though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I was sorry, you know, of course he then wound up going to the Loop, and a lot of people thought that was pretty strange because they'd been making fun of him on the Loop and all that. But the reality was that GN really wasn't interested in renewing the contract and competing for it. He just if they had made an effort, he would have stayed.
Oh, I know he would have.
Yeah, but they didn't.
He was good, and I enjoy your show too.
That's great. It's great to have you. Yes, in the words of Larry the Legend, speak your onions.
Listen, you have a good week, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So there you have it. And it was sad because Larry had suffered a stroke, and that was a long time ago, like 1989 or whatever. And he lived until about 2010, 2011 or thereabouts. And what a shame. But in any event, yes, Larry the Legend Johnson, you betcha, Milwaukee's own. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Let's see what we can do before the top of the hour news. I believe we have David in Muskegon. The 3 minutes are yours. Well, they're two now, but they're yours.
Hey, I was wondering something.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to ask Fran, because, you know, what's coming up is the Summer of Love, 1967, 59 years, because she grew up in San Francisco, from what she was saying. Mm-hmm. Is she remembered anything about the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco, and if she had any contact with any of what were called the flower children there, and what she remembered about her contact with them, and what songs does her and Gary remember from the summer of 1967?
All right.
I would like to know.
All right.
That.
Well, maybe they'll tell us. All right. I leave it open for their calls. Yes, I remember it well, and I found it revolting. But anyway, yes, indeed. All right. But sure enough, I'm sure they might have something to say. Thanks for calling. All right. Not a fan, to say the least. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Brian and Seneca. And James on the south side with plenty of stories. Chris is in South Carolina, don't you know, Greenwood to be exact. And there's room for you as well. So that's the deal. Attendance will be taken, and we will return on WGN Radio.
The runaway look in your eyes should have told me I was biting off more than I could chew, yeah. But you were out of sight. If I wait around just a little bit longer, I could win your heart with just a little more time, yeah. The time goes fast, and I'm not gonna last now.
Darling, you is killing me.
Why can't you give that to me? Yes, I
Darling, you is killing me.
You won't give an inch, and I ain't gonna try to.
Darling, you is killing me.
Now I should know it. And if I play with fire,
I'm gonna get burned, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fire burns hot. I give it all I got.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and there it is. It was Mike in Cleveland's request, The Silver Caboose, Loving You Is Killing Me, 1968, on Buddha. There was actually a remake of that as a flip side on Double Shot in 1969 that became quite a big beach music hit, too, by the Georgia Prophets. Sounded quite the same, actually, and in case you were wondering.
The runaway look in your eyes should have told me more than I could chew, yeah. But you were out of sight. I had to take a bite now. Why can't you give as willingly as I do?
You
won't give an
Yeah, Billy Scott was in that group too. Yeah, a lot of wonderful beach music things. But probably the most interesting thing about Loving You Is Killing Me is it was written by Bobby Bloom. Yeah, Mr. Montego Bay, who later died of an accidental shooting, and I don't have the details. I don't know if it was his hand or somebody else's, but either way, he was gone. All right, so David from Muskegon wanted Fran's reminiscences of Haight-Ashbury in 1967. Should she have any? So, Fran, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello. Oh, God. Oh, help me. No,
yes.
I do not have any. I was like 11 years old.
Oh.
I mean, you know, my mother would have skinned me alive if I went to Haight-Ashbury.
Ah. Yeah, well, I can see that.
I will admit that when I was young and so forth, I wanted to run away and go to Haight-Ashbury.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just basically wanted to get away from home.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And that hippie lifestyle at that time, you know, seemed pretty cool to me. Ugh. But what do I know? I was 11. You know?
Well, the thing that
I
the only thing I remember was the outrageous traffic, because it was literally 100,000 people come to this small area. And, you know, so it was overcrowding to the max. And of course, you know, we talk about now what's wrong with San Francisco. Well, Haight-Ashbury was kind of a microcosm of that. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went, you know, with my family, we would go to San Francisco to do certain things. And, yeah, it would, you know, and I think somebody, my family wanted to go on in that bus tour. And, you know, I was really embarrassed that they wanted to go and, you know, gawk at these people. And I, you know, just like, ah, come on, you know. But, yeah, they had bus tours that would go and you could look at all the hippies and... You know,
well,
I think the deal is
it was by Golden State Park. So, you know, you had the big park nearby and they had all those old Victorians and they were cheap. So, you know, that was really the deal. I think long before the Summer of Love, if you will, by 1960, mm-hmm. you were seeing, you know, musicians or, you know, back in the late 50s, quote unquote, beatniks, if you remember that, and all that.
Yeah,
again,
yeah.
Counterculture because it was cheap. And so these Victorians, it was really, really sad because they were at one point beautiful, large single family homes. And what they had done, of course, at World War II time is carved them into boarding houses or individual apartments. And, you know, as the middle class was relocating out to the suburb, they basically built their own tenements.
But it was always kind of a gathering place for.
Right.
You know, countercultural
right.
people.
Yeah, right. From 1960. Absolutely it was. It was cheap.
You know, and I'm like, you know, and I read Kerouac and I read all this stuff and I'm like, oh, I want to do that, you know. But, of course, now I'm older and wiser and, you know, but I don't, and I everybody who lives in the Bay Area does not have memories of, in fact, I don't think even a lot of the people that were in Haight-Ashbury have much memories with the Better Living Through Chemistry thing.
Well, right, right. Absolutely. The people who didn't get out.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Because.
And I went there in about 72. I had a friend who lived there. And actually, that was one time when I tried to run away from home and I got found. I mean, it's hard to hide when you're a blind person.
Yeah.
And you're a high school age blind girl. It's kind of, especially when you go traveling with another partially sighted person.
Right.
It's kind of hard to disappear into the crowd. But anyway, I had a friend that lived in one of those nice, those houses.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was kind of, you know, people would come in and out and that kind of thing. But unfortunately, I should say, although I didn't think it was fortunate at the time, I was found and taken back home and grounded. And
yeah. Yeah. It's a wonder they didn't beat you within an inch of your life. Yes. So.
I was actually, I would have rather have been beaten within an inch of my life than the lectures
I got.
Oh, my God.
Well,
you know, it's like just...
It became very frightening to parents when you had things like Timothy Leary, turn on, tune in, drop out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but and they had the human be in, you know, oh, God, that was like 30,000 people. Literally, it was more than the area could have ever sustained. And the only people I know who wax sentimental about this weren't there.
Right, yeah, it's like all the people who claim they were at Woodstock, and, you know, Woodstock, I was not there, but I know it was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, John was there. He's got pictures to prove it.
Oh, my God.
Tell you stories, but yeah. Yeah, no, I had the displeasure of working the Miami Pop Festival, which was about 6 months before Woodstock, and originally the same people who put that together were going to put together Woodstock, but Woodstock fell apart so many times, six ways to Sunday, but there was just no way. Absolutely no way.
I'd say
it was said at the time that over 100,000 young people, as they like to say, flocked to Haight-Ashbury. I wouldn't be surprised, but you know, being there, how small an area this is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and most of them were living rough. You know, out in the park, and you know, just different. You know, and it was. I mean, you know, it was not the beautiful thing that, you know, some people try to portray it. But you know, I mean, when I was young, I kind of romanticized it, and you know, I was kind of on the countercultural side of things anyway, still am in a way, but I still have all my brain cells, at least I think I do.
Well, you weren't trying the LSD or the mescaline or whatever it was they were handing out.
No, I did do LSD once, and that was
enough.
That's the end of that. That was enough. Yeah, I'm paranoid enough. I don't need drugs.
Right. Don't need help. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, talk about a panic attack. Oh my God.
But you know, after the big be-in, they tried the human be-in. They tried again. They had a couple smoke-ins during the summer, and you know, basically nobody came to those for the most part, other than people who were fighting the fact that cannabis was illegal. You know, it's just...
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. What can I say? But I can understand David. He wasn't there, and he likes the music, which is unfortunate but true.
Yeah. I do admit that I do like a lot of that music still.
Oh, God.
And,
okay.
Yeah, I do. But I have, you know, I like varied things. Yeah. But... you know, like John, I was talking to John one time, and he's a big Doors fan, and so am I.
Okay, yeah, we've got a big concert poster that was signed by all of them on the wall.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
And I just finished reading a book about them, and so anyway, but it's, you know, but I also love my R&B, and, you know.
Yeah,
I'm very eclectic musically, I guess.
Yeah, I may ask for equal time because somewhere I have the first concert poster from that 1951 Alan Freed concert. So maybe I need equal time on the wall.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. Yeah. before I forget, I have a request.
Oh, you do you? All right. And what would that request be?
I want to hear Catch You on the Rebound.
Oh, well, you know I'll play that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I heard it on Soul of the City and the other night.
Yeah.
Sunday night.
Brenton Wood at his finest.
Yeah. I love anything.
Me
him.
Too. Yeah. Me, absolutely me too. I'm so sorry he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think I heard that song when it was out.
Well, it was a flip side for one thing. Yeah. It was the flip side of Baby, You Got It.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the one, the 45 I didn't have. I had Oogum Boogum.
Right. Yeah.
I think the flip side of that was I Like the Way You Love Me.
Yep, absolutely. And so, Flip Side of Baby, You Got It is Kitsch on the Rebound, which I thought was the definite A-side. But Oogum Boogum was also an album, so and that was interesting.
Oh,
and
one
of my favorite things on that was I Think You Got Your Fools Mixed Up.
Oh, I'd like to hear that.
Oh, you don't know? I Think You Got Your Fools Mixed Up. You Must Think I'm Somebody Else. I'll play that next.
Maybe I've heard it and I just don't remember it right now. And if I do, I'll tell you. If I heard it, I wouldn't mind hearing it again.
it's just a great song. All right, I'll do it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. So 888-876-5593. I Think You Got Your Fools Mixed Up is coming up next on WGN Radio.
You got your fools mixed up. You must think I'm somebody else. I'm not the same fool you knew that couldn't help himself and followed you around like a dog, strong on a chain, and wagged his cute little tail whenever you called his name. But baby, that will be no more. Remember when you walked out the door, I was on my knees. I said, now baby, please. He just looked at me and said, you know the score. And then you said, get some more dough, and maybe one day you'll be back.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, 1967 was a spectacular year for Brenton Wood. And I know that Fran knows that, actually, because if she has Give Me a Little Side, it's the flip side of that, just like a Kitsch on the Rebound's a flip side of Baby, You Got It, which, of course, we will play next because she asked for it. And it's a fine song. And, that's the summer of 67 I care about, David. The rest of it, well, so be it. All right, Brian and Seneca, welcome back to WGN Radio.
It's great to be here. Just had a few reminiscences on Eddie Schwartz and Steve and Johnny. Yeah. Also, you mentioned the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood of San Francisco and the homes that were split into multiple apartments and so on.
Yes.
For all the changes that's happened to San Francisco, some good, some bad. The formerly split in the gazillion apartment building Victorian and Edwardian houses are now fully restored single-family homes to the high nines and only marginally less famous than the Painted Ladies in another part of San Francisco.
Yeah, and the prices are just out of sight. I mean, no one I know could afford it.
Well, you can't afford to buy an outhouse in California.
Exactly. So, I occasionally will see some of the preserved houses. They'll be for sale or whatever, and some have names, you know, like the Four Seasons house and all that.
And you look at the price, and then you read the fine print. This is for one night, double occupancy.
Yeah, right. It's I love when I go to these sites. Do you have a specific budget in mind? Nothing that I could afford is in this state. So, absolutely. And they're given walking tours of it, all that. And there were outlying neighborhoods like Buena Vista Park, and I know those mansions, they've probably redone as well. So. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know this, but remember the Grateful Dead house? That was 710 Ashbury. I'm sure that has been restored because that was in 1890. I should look it up.
I'm pretty sure it's restored, and I'm pretty sure that either it was restored to a polite version of how they occupied it and is open for for-profit tours, or it's a private house, but they tolerate people going extra slow, driving past the front of it, yeah. that even the Grateful Dead couldn't get in the Grateful Dead house anymore, at least.
Hold on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Maurice Ravel, 1930 on Polydor and Bolero. And that was what Gene wanted to hear. And I admit I normally would never play anything that was classical. But I thought to myself, well, you know, Gene likes it. Maybe I can find a doo-wop version, right? But what was interesting when I started to look is that people apparently have done a lot of writing on this particular song, because obviously it's well known, to say the least. And one of the things that really caught my ear was that they thought that Flamingo by Earl Bostick was based on it. Yeah, you probably remember Flamingo. Well, maybe not. 1951. It was a great song. And yeah, I'll say that. So I figure, well, let's hear together if we hear any Ravel in it. Yeah, well, I don't know that I make the connection, but I sure do like it. They say the track masterfully uses the sweeping triple-driven bolero rhythm, allowing Bostick's alto sax to wail over a hypnotic Latin-tinged groove. Yeah, well, that part's true. The other one that they mentioned I thought was really interesting was Harlem Nocturne. And, of course, they didn't know about Johnny Otis. They got it by the Viscounts. But I mean, if you really want to hear Harlem Nocturne, you gotta go to Johnny Otis. And now we gotta see, does this sound anything like Bolero? If they say so, I guess. And but they also had brought up Sleepwalk, claiming that featured the lush floating melody. A couple of steel guitars. Romantic sway of bolero rhythm. Well, I never really thought about that, but it was a big hit. And they finally concluded, I probably don't need to play that for you, but finally concluded with a King Curtis. Yeah, right. They're comparing Soul Twist to bolero? Well, all right then. That I got here. Thank you. So they also get into Jeff Beck, but we'll leave him right where he belongs. Then we'll get back to Brian and Seneca. Sorry about the interruption, Brian. So during the news, I made use of myself to look up who owns the property now. And this is interesting. 710 Ashbury Street was sold in 1973 for $55,000. Now, remember, it had been a rental for a decade before that, so you can only imagine what the condition of this house was. But because of California law, the same entity still owns it. Their entire taxes on it are $3,000 a year.
Yeah, they got lucky and never got reassessed.
No, they couldn't be, exactly. Well, but that's an interesting thing, because if they made massive changes, and I would bet they did, they should have been reassessed. But they tried to sell it in 97 and in 2010, and both times they listed it for $990,000, and both times they removed the listing. And it was listed for 4,760 days and no takers.
Well, not all of the changes to San Francisco between the two summers of love were for the better.
Well, sure, but I mean, the house next door, I think, sold for like $6.2 million or something. So I can only imagine. They must have done some upgrades. But the woman who lives in it now has been interviewed, and she's been living in it for 40 years. But since it hadn't changed any hands, I assume it was her family that had it beforehand.
Probably so. No reason to get rid of it, especially if nobody's going to buy it.
Well, right. And I thought $990,000 was really cheap. But then again, I can only imagine, because all of these houses were rentals, and they were down and dirty rentals throughout the 60s. So you can only imagine what the interior must be like. But they must have fixed it up. I don't know. I'm curious.
Well, they'd have had to have cleaned it.
Well, yeah, obviously, I would think that, but I would also think
the lead singer, whose name escapes me right now, but the lead singer for the Grateful Dead, managed to get a general discharge from the Army and get out as early as possible, and he did it very simply.
Okay.
First, he gave up soap, deodorant, and water outside of the body roughly from the time he showed up at Fort Ordon, California on.
Okay. Now, was this Bob Weir? Because I know he was a big deal with Bob Weir was. I'm trying to think of the, and Jerry Garcia was the other one.
Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, the two of them together, Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir, they were both at Atherton High, and that's where they met. And so, and that was, you know, not too many years before the Grateful Dead became, well, I guess they both dropped out of high school and moved to a house just near Haight-Ashbury, obviously, 710. So, yeah. That's the deal. All right.
Yeah, and all those Bolero songs, they must be hearing Cuban dances and Spanish waltzes in the back of their head somewhere or another, because none of them sounded anything like Ravel.
I didn't think, oh, good, I'm so glad you said that. I thought maybe I just didn't have a deeper appreciation.
No, and for that matter, a lot of lyricists who are otherwise stumped for a melody love classical composers because they're in the public domain.
Oh, of course they are. Yes, yes. But
and you change up the drum beat and maybe re-key it and put your lyrics on it.
Right.
You own it.
You do. It's true. All right. Well, very good. All right. Good to hear from you. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, about Eddie Schwartz and them.
Yes.
I listened to all three of them when they were still at WIND, and this was in the days when their transmitter was so weak, not that it's any stronger now, but you couldn't get WIND where I live in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this old immediate post-war Philco radio, and that radio had some pull to it, so I could get WIND clear as day after dark. So I listened to Ed Schwartz and Steve King and Johnny Putnam when they were on the radio there. And looking at the internet to refresh my memory, Schwartz was the first of the three to move to WGN.
Yes.
And he was invited by Bob Collins.
Yes.
Which makes their management's reluctance to re-sign Schwartz when his contract ended, all the more curious because Collins was still around
absolutely.
In the 2000s.
Yes, absolutely he was.
I guess they decided it was cheaper to run a single six-hour radio show every night instead of two three-hour shows, even if Johnny Putnam wasn't brought over full-time, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah, I don't know. Because
she originally showed up, first off...
In mornings, doing like,
Yeah. First off, this was in the days of Dr. Milton Rosenberg on Extension 720. He was not the original host, but he was one of the guests on the first broadcast of Extension 720 with three or four other guests and whoever was hosting at the time.
Okay.
And he made such a powerful impression that after maybe a year or two, he was called back to be the host, and he remained the host until basically the end of the show. With the Night of the Long Knives, when Rosenberg was forced to retire, they tried bringing in a platoon of different hosts, and nobody could handle it.
Yeah, I can understand that. You really can't do it. Absolutely.
But in the days of Rosenberg, Extension 720 ran from 9 to 11 p.m.,
yeah.
And then they were followed during the weekdays once they quit having Jay Andres work overnight 7 days a week. They were followed by 3 hours of Eddie Schwartz and then ultimately the 3 hours of Steve King. Mm. And Steve King would bring his wife in sneakily by calling her on the intra-office telephone. She would be the trouble desk, the information desk, the research desk, some nights just desk. And it was those interactions between King and Putnam on air, along with the callers, that was the final straw to move her over from traffic to co-host with King, which she's done ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
And Schwartz wasn't really supposed to become a overnight host because people figured he did not have a voice for radio.
Right, absolutely, that nasally voice and all that, of course.
But
he had such good content.
Yeah, the one night where his host called in sick at the last minute with no substitute host available meant they either had to choose between Ed Schwartz and Dead Airspace, and Dead Airspace is no good at reading commercials. So Schwartz got his chance, and he grabbed it, and he never stopped running.
No, and he was great. When I would occasionally, when I was at KOA in Denver and there were a lot of sports interruptions, I would fly to Chicago and sit with him during the show, and then we'd drive around afterwards. And this guy knew everyone and everything. He knew where everybody was buried, and it was always a trip to be with Eddie.
Yeah, and although I don't think they ever worked together directly, Ed Schwartz was certified as a paramedic, although I don't believe he ever went to work for the Chicago Fire Department or any other agency. But you could almost see him working as a paramedic on a scene where Larry Schreiner was working on the police side.
Yeah, no, I think he got that thing when he was in college at Triton, I think. But I don't think he ever did anything with it either. But boy, he sure knew, like I say, he knew where all the bodies were buried. He knew everybody.
Oh yeah, and he if he ever failed to put on a good show, well, I missed a fair number of them, but it's if he put on a bad show, it's one of the ones I didn't hear.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Well, wonderful to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. He was very young when he died. He was only like 62, but weight is what got him. He just couldn't carry that much weight too much longer, and sadly that was it. And so, yeah, I talked to him a few weeks before he died, a few times actually, and I knew that it was imminent. All right, so we've got Marge, and Marge is in West Dallas. Marge, welcome back to WGN Radio. It's been a while.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm doing well, but I had heard the last part of a call from last hour, you had a guy that his wife had vertigo?
Oh, she does, yes. And we've talked about this at length because I had vertigo for about 5 years, and she's been doing therapy.
Okay, because I had vertigo also, and I went to the Mayo Clinic website when my doctor wasn't of any help.
Right.
And found out there's like four types of vertigo.
Yes, there is. But most of us had benign positional vertigo, the BPV, meaning they had no idea why. Did they ever find out what, because Meniere's disease, yes, but most people don't have that, or, you know, vestibular neuritis or neurological. But most people have the BPV. How about you?
That was mine. When I'd get up in the morning especially, I'd be very, very dizzy.
Uh-huh.
And it was usually when every year I would go to a family reunion and we'd go to one of the water parks.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd come home and I'd have such bad sinus problems. And it was from my sinuses getting an infection, and it affected pressure against my inner ear.
Right.
And that caused the problem. And of all places I went, I didn't go to a doctor. Well, I went to a doctor, and he wasn't of any help. And the readings I got from the Mayo Clinic website mentioned a physical therapist, and I remember thinking, a physical therapist?
Right, right, like Epley, absolutely.
Yeah, Epley maneuver.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Epley's the big one. That's what I had mentioned the first time the caller and I had talked about it with his wife. And they also have other VRT, other therapy that they do now, too, but Epley's the big one.
Yes, and he helped me in like one session, and then I had a little tune-up after that in a second session. But there was a man from my church that he suffered for years and years after a major car accident where he actually broke the steering wheel of his car. This was years ago. And I told him to go to this therapist, and not knowing the seriousness of why he had it.
Right.
And the physical therapist helped him. He suffered for years and years going to a doctor who was treating him. Well, you'd think the doctor would, but they don't want to send you to a therapist.
Right.
Because, you know, that means you don't need a doctor.
Right. Or God forbid you mention the word chiropractor, they turn green.
Yes. Yeah. And he was so thrilled, he and his wife, because he suffered for, it was several decades from this accident. And it took a maneuver without meds. It was that Epley maneuver.
Yep. It works very well to reposition. It didn't work for me, but it certainly didn't make me worse. And I was more than happy to try it. And after about 5 years, it just, like everything else, it went away. We don't know why. We don't know why it came, why it's gone, but it is, thank God. But, for a lot of people, that's why I mentioned Epley directly to the caller, because that, of all the treatments, that's the one that has the best success.
Yeah, and it worked for another person. My sister had she's a hairdresser. She had a client who was suffering seasonal as the changes and the pollen and stuff and the sinus problem. And it helped her, too.
Yeah.
So it'll help her.
I hope so. I don't know if she's doing that or not, or if she's doing vestibular rehab, which they do. It's kind of a customized PT thing where they retrain the brain to recognize the signals, you know, because that theory is that your brain isn't recognizing things correctly, and that's correct. It's leading the imbalance and the dizziness. So I don't know. I don't know what she's doing, but I sure hope it's working.
Yeah. Well, I hope it works with that Epley maneuver, because it's Mayo Clinic recommended it, and it helped for me and two other people.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth trying. There's no downside to it. I haven't heard of any reason why you wouldn't try it.
Yeah, and it's so easy.
Yeah, yeah, and not painful.
Right, and no meds.
Right, all good. All right,
okay.
Thanks.
You're
good
welcome.
To hear from you. Don't wait so long next time.
Oh, I hung on.
Okay, well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, so 888-876-5593. I don't remember if I actually did something or not. Adam can maybe whisper in my ear and tell me, but if I didn't, I'll do it now.
5645.
So, okay. So, how about this? We'll talk to Brian and Marge, Brian with a Y, and Marge and James and Chris and Mark and you two next hour on WGN Radio.
You've been gone now.
forget and forgive later, baby. Catch you on the rebound. Rebound. You didn't even write me or drop me a postcard. Now you want to come back and make a new start later, baby. Catch you on the rebound. Rebound. Oh, you were the first love that I ever had. But you've been gone so long now, I don't feel so bad. Later, baby. Catch you on the rebound.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. Yes, more Brenton Wood, 1967, and the flip side of Baby You Got It, Catch You on the Rebound. And yeah, wonderful stuff. On Double Shot, that was Irwin Zucker's little label. He used to have a stamp on all of them. Promotion and Motion. All right, so there you have that. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh and Jim in Richmond. All right, Jim, what's up tonight?
Hey, Raleigh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just am excited to talk to you about Steve and Johnny.
Okay.
I have listened to them for a long time, and I love their show. But I want to let you know that after listening to them and texting them and everything, I found out we grew up in the same neighborhood.
Oh.
And,
okay.
And she went to Senn High School, which is where my father went in the 30s, and it's like a less than a quarter mile from my house.
Uh-huh.
And after all of our, you know, listening to her and everything, we grew up in this like a quarter mile from our house. I went to St. Gregory High School, which is like three quarters of a mile from my house.
Uh-huh.
And that's where my parents were born. I mean, married. And I just, you know, was excited to hear about all the stuff that she was talking about. And I just want you to know that it's, you know, it's great to hear from people from my old neighborhood.
Sure.
And everything. And I'm just overwhelmed that you took my call. And I'm trying to get my thoughts together.
That's right.
But it's just, you know, amazing that it's just so close to where I live. And now I live like 100 miles away. But,
oh, I know. And I wish you could get back to civilization.
Right. I would love to get back, you know, back to that civilization.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to let you know that I've been talking to Karen from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and she lives right across the street from Senn High School, which is less than a quarter of a mile from where I used to live. And if you want to talk to somebody who's gone through everything, I wish you would, you know, talk to her, because she has gone from everything. She's been blind since birth.
Yep. No, she calls. We talk to her when she calls.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And I just talked to her like 2 days ago or 3 days ago because John gave her my phone number. And thank you, John.
Okay.
And she is wonderful. And you know, and I just want you to know, if you could talk to her for a while, she would tell you some tremendous stories of how she's how she's gone through what she's had to go on through since birth.
Well, that's great.
And
she's welcome to call anytime.
Right. And also, too, is thank you for everybody that's been helping me and everything. And I'm going through a lot of stuff with a lot of people in my life right now. But I just wish Karen would call and talk to you.
Well, hopefully she will. The door is open.
Right. And I wanted to let you know that I love Steve and Johnny, but I love you guys more.
Well, either way, we're just glad to have you, and we'll talk to you soon. Now, tomorrow's Wednesday. You're going to the retinologist?
No.
Okay.
I don't have any more important appointments to the 17th.
All right. So some time off. Well, hopefully you can do something you like.
Right.
All right.
And thank everybody.
Okay. Thanks for calling. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Jim. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. And we have Brian with a Y in, well, it says Miami with two I's, but I think Broward County. But either way, Brian is back.
Hey, Raleigh. Well, I, too, am overwhelmed every time you take one of my calls, which is why I say so many knuckleheaded things. But I'll try to do better. The news of the night has inspired me to paraphrase the iambic pentameter words that Shakespeare put into the mouth of the statesman Mark Antony. Friends, Chicagoans, countrymen, I come not to praise Scott Pelley, because I never liked him in the first place, nor do I come to bury him. He just did that himself, or at least his career, at Black Rock yesterday at that infamous meeting. And while Bad Day at Black Rock was a fantastic Spencer Tracy film, it was a boneheaded career move for him. And tonight, he's as done at CBS News as Murrow and Cronkite are tonight. What say you, Raleigh?
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, I mean, you knew Pelley was fired.
Yes, but see, I don't have a TV. Well, I mean, we have them in the house because John watches TV. I never had a TV before John. I don't watch this stuff. I couldn't identify him out of a crowd, but yes.
Well, you read the New York Times.
Oh, I absolutely do not. I don't I don't read that, and I don't read the Washington Compost either, so no.
Well, then we have different reading habits.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. No, I'm more likely to read The New American.
The charming young lady earlier talking about sightless people, that's a special place in my existence. Both my mother, my late mother, and I have read for the blind. And neither of us had any blind folks in our family, we just both naturally and independently gravitated toward that. I was amazed when I called up St. Louis from L.A. and told Mom that I was reading for the blind. She said, yeah, I've been doing that for 6 months.
Oh, great.
So I guess, but anyway, that brought to mind something that's, I hope you'll find this as important as I do. There was a caller to a talk radio program several years back, Bob in Cleveland, who had just recently, 2-3 months before he made the call to the commercial news talk radio program, and it's a nationally syndicated show. A couple months before, he went totally blind. Not legally blind, totally blind.
Right.
And he was not handling it well emotionally. And he called up just for emotional support from the host, and the host had nothing more to say, better to say than, well, good luck to you, and if I could reach out and hug you, I would, but we're on radio. That's all he said. Here's some advice for anybody who is sightless. I'm not much of a musician, Raleigh, but I can play all the basic rock instruments, piano, guitar, drums, bass, even a little harp, but the only one I can play better with my eyes closed is drumming. I would advise anybody who is sightless to take up the drums. You can, in short order, if somebody just shows you the basics, just doing a basic backbeat, you can take it from there yourself and be just as accomplished a musician on that instrument in a way you wouldn't be able to probably be on, say, piano, unless you're Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles or something like that. Comment, please.
Yeah, well, Ricky McKinney, he was Blind Boys of Alabama, one of the most famous driving drummers out there. So, yes.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It just might cheer up somebody that is in that unfortunate situation. Raleigh, always an honor to
Thanks
chat
for
with
calling.
You, and keep rocking forever. Yeah. Never retire.
Oh, God, don't say that. But it's good to hear from you. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. All right, so yes, indeed. Yeah, it requires a lot of spatial memory because, of course, you're not looking at the drums and the cymbals, so you have to map it out in your brain first, every piece of hardware. You make sure it's in the same spot every time, obviously. But if you're doing this at home, your kit is set up, so it's not a big deal. And then, of course, there's some memorization and then vibrational feedback. So if you're into music, I think it's a good suggestion. If you like that. Yeah, I remember, gosh, junior high school, you either had to take arts and crafts or arts and something or whatever, or band. And I tried arts and crafts, and they kind of threw me out. They suggested band, because I can't draw a straight line with a ruler. And so I take band, and I take drums, right? Because I realize, oh, I've got a gimmick here. My mother didn't know about practice pads, so I didn't get one. I got a block of wood. And boy, I tell you, anytime I wanted her to yell, don't do your homework, I just bang on the block of wood and get away with it. But I remember after the first year, I said, well, I might sign up for band again. And the band instructor said, please don't. And so I realized, okay, no native sense of rhythm. Got it. All right, so 888-876-5593. But I'll tell you what, I know a good backbeat when I hear it. We'll pick it up. We've got Mark in Aurora. We got Chris in South Carolina, Karen in Chicago, and you two coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Robert James, and that's Sammy Turner on Big Top. Always, Mike in Cleveland wanted to hear that. 1959, happy to play it. Mark in Aurora, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, good morning. It looks like I'm going to have to give you some of my comments tonight and some of them either tomorrow or Thursday night, because I have a few reflections, kind of nostalgic, on the Milt Rosenberg show. But tonight I've got some comments on Ravel's Bolero. Mm. First of all, comparing between that and the other pieces you played,
yeah,
I could only hear the faintest resemblance. I would say maybe there was influence there, but not.
Yeah, I'm
much
with you.
Resemblance.
I didn't hear
Secondly,
it.
Secondly, my high school music teacher and choral director once said that he read somewhere that Ravel drove himself insane writing that piece because it was so repetitive. And the repetitiveness brings me to my third set of comments, and that is that Ravel was a precursor to people like Mike Oldfield and Philip Glass and maybe Tangerine Dreams too, because they all did music that was very repetitive but constantly and gradually changing, and it built upon itself. And one piece that does kind of resemble Ravel is There's an album by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer called Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the last cut on that album is called Abaddon's Bolero, which, you know, probably is tongue-in-cheek because Abaddon is a synonym for Satan. But anyway.
Wait a minute, why?
I don't know. Well, I have to call and find out.
Oh, we're off the air?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I'm listening to
not now. This
not
is
air.
A replay. So
oh, yeah, you're right. We're off the air. All right. Hang on a minute, Mark. I don't know why we're off the air. As far as I know, I'm broadcasting, but I've got a story. All right.
Adam's talking to you.
You are? You're talking?
Hey,
Raleigh. What's the deal, Adam?
I don't know. I lost you for a minute there, but I got you back now. You ready to go back on?
Yeah, then I'll talk to you during the news.
Okay.
All right, so here I am. I don't know why I was gone, but I think why I was gone, actually, I've tried another broadband provider, and it's normally my backup connection, and they're supposed to be really good, don't you know? Yeah, well, so we'll just leave that for the time being, and we have Mark back. All right, you with me, Mark?
Yeah, did the audience miss most of what I just said?
Everybody missed what you said.
Okay, maybe I'll just start over that.
We talked about
the pieces that you played have very little resemblance to Bolero. They might have an influence there, but that's my first comment. My second comment is that my high school music teacher and choral director told me he read somewhere that Ravel drove himself nearly insane writing that piece because it was so repetitive.
All right, hang on
a
minute. Let's talk about that a second because that's actually not true. As far as that goes.
Well, he just said he read it.
No, I understand that, but there's something behind it that's interesting because neurologists and psychiatrists have actually studied it. And they agree that the obsessive repeating structure was an early symptom of primary progressive aphasia, which is degenerative brain condition, rather than the cause of his madness. So it was composed in 1928, and it was seen as an indicator, a symptom of what was going on, because it was a single, unevolving melodic theme that repeated 18 times without development.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, believe me, they've done entire studies on this, saying that this is indicative of declining neurological health and distress, and that it was progressive aphasia.
Because Oliver Sacks talked about one of his patients losing specific forms of brain power, and he was an artist, and Oliver Sacks commented that this was the essay called "The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat," and he had a degenerative brain disease, and it turns out that his wife, who apparently kissed his feet, thought that he was moving into a new form of abstract art, and Oliver Sacks commented that he was so sad because what was actually happening was that this man's art was degenerating because his brain was degenerating.
Right.
And then thirdly, there's a, he was... Bolero, I think it was a precursor to people like Mike Oldfield and Philip Glass, because they also wrote a genre called minimalism, which builds up upon itself gradually and goes through gradual changes despite its repetition. And there's an album by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer called Trilogy. Are you still there?
Oh, I'm here. You're just... Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, could I like something less? I don't think so. But then again, I didn't like Bolero.
Well, but they did a piece called Abaddon's Bolero, which is another way of saying the devil's Bolero. But I think they said that in tongue-in-cheek because, like Ravel's Bolero, it started sparse and it gradually built up until there was a whole big musical climax. And that's the last cut on Emerson, Lake, and Palmer's Trilogy album. Now, you and I are obviously coming from different areas because I love progressive rock, including Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Yeah, and I'm not going to hear it. But for people who want to hear it, that's fine. Now, let me tell you one more thing about Bolero. When they did this study, they also went back and researched friends at the time and comments that were made. And there were a lot of notes that he was becoming increasingly absent-minded. He was having difficulty with coordination. So the bottom line is that the hypnotic repetitive nature was a classic symptom of early dementia and brain tissue erosion. So it was
a famous piece was inspired by a brain disease.
Yes, right. Rather than that he went crazy writing the music.
Something.
Well, I feel vindicated. I didn't like it the first time I heard it. Well, so there you are.
Well, actually, it's been said that Handel's Messiah.
Oh, I'm not going to listen to that.
It's been said that Handel was a bipolar person and that he wrote the Messiah during a manic phase height.
This makes sense to me. I just don't understand why people are still revering it. But that's just me.
Oh, that's another piece. That's another piece I love.
Uh-huh. No, if it's classical, I don't like it, period. I don't like any of them.
So, you're so impoverished.
Oh, I absolutely. No, it's interesting when people say you know so much about music. That's so wrong because my tastes are so narrow and they are very narrow. And anything outside it, I won't stand for it. I will not stand in the room. You know, like 2001, when that movie came out, I walked out of it. I don't know how it turned out, but I was not going to listen to Also Sprach Zarathustra one more minute. So no, it's just not
when
my
the
thing.
When the light beam becomes more narrowly focused, it also goes farther.
Yeah, well.
So you're covering a lot of ground within a narrow.
Very narrow.
Beam.
Yes, exactly. But no,
there you go.
For whatever reason, can't stand the stuff. But it's interesting nonetheless.
So tomorrow or Thursday, I'll reminisce a little about Milt Rosenberg.
Oh, I'd like that. Now, tomorrow we're on right at 10, and then Thursday, it's depending on when the Stanley Cup playoffs stop playing. Yeah. All right. Good deal.
I probably won't call till after 11:30.
Well, I'll be here.
All right.
Thanks. Appreciate
it.
Yeah. Speaking of being here, we'll be here right after the news on WGN Radio.
As I got on a city bus and found a vacant seat, I thought I saw my future bride walking up the street. I shouted to the driver, "Hey, conductor, you must slow down. I think I see her. Please let me off the bus."
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It was Jim in Richmond who said, "Play your favorite Chuck Berry record," and I didn't have to think twice. Absolutely. Nadine, is it you? 1964 on Chess. Know every word. Sing it out loud with it. You don't want to hear it. All right, so Karen is in Chicago. Speaking of the devil, since Jim had been discussing Karen, welcome back to WGN Radio. Thanks.
Hi, Raleigh. You know what? I never missed anything. In fact, when the news was going on, I could hear you talking to
You would have heard it then. It didn't happen then. It happened from 12:19 to 12:21. But I can tell you, we've since done a little investigating here, and it's not our broadband connection because the stream was solid. There were no dropouts, so it probably was the codec. So, yeah, we figured it out.
I've been listening. Mm-hmm. I've been listening since a little after 10.
Yeah.
So nothing happened. I want to thank Jim for the compliment. My goodness. I really enjoy talking to him. He lives in an area that I'm quite familiar with. I actually never knew where Richland was, but I traveled back and forth for years between Waukesha and Janesville, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And we would take the bus on Friday night and come home, and on Sunday go back to school.
Uh-huh.
And it was incredible just talking about, I remembered the route, and he told me a little more about, of course, my dad would tell us, you know, well, my dad had 5% sight. My mom was totally blind, and my sister and I were totally blind.
So is this genetic?
Yeah, on my mother's side.
Okay, and that's interesting.
We all had retinoblastoma.
Oh, man.
When I was a kid, it was referred to as glioma.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's two different things or what, but that's what we were told. And then later on, as when I was an adult, I was told it was referred to as retinoblastoma.
Yeah, they change things like that, but I think basically, because when you're talking about a glioma, it's a little different, but retinoblastoma is, you know, normally what you think about if you've got the cancerous tumors and you're in a young child, or an optic.
Yeah, that's what.
But what you can have is you can have an optic pathway glioma, which is a tumor in the nerves connecting the eye to the brain rather than in the eye. So if it's eye, it's a blastoma.
In this case, they removed the eyes and severed the optic nerve.
Oh,
so, therefore, yeah, we weren't totally blind. I don't remember. Now, my sister's, from what my mother told us, hers was done in two surgeries. One, she was 9 months old when they discovered it, and then they removed the eyes, I guess, a year. And from what I understand, they did mine all at once, and I was about a year old.
Yeah, and the reason they act quickly is if you do act quickly, the cure rate is almost complete. It's over 95%. So in terms of that, that's why they do that. But that's certainly true with retinoblastomas, but with optic pathway gliomas, they're very slow growing. So there's other things that can be tried with that. But with retinoblastoma, you know, it's all over. And there's a mutation. There's some mutation in one of the genes, and I don't remember which one, but you're saying your mom had it, but your dad did not?
Oh, no. We're not real sure. What? Because, of course, he was born in 1913.
Right.
So all we know is, and from what we were told as kids,
right,
they put too much of, I can't remember when it was, in his eyes, and he lost his sight.
Oh.
Some chemical or not. I don't remember what it was, but it was put in a baby's eyes when they're born.
Oh, yeah, right, like silver?
I don't remember now what it was.
Right.
I knew, but anyhow, they put too much in his eyes. He lost all the sight in one eye and had 5% in the other.
Oh, that's a shame.
But we had a lot of fun growing up. I remember after my grandfather died, my grandmother came to live with us when I was about three, and the reason she did that was I had a cleft palate. I was born with it, and at one point, I had to be fed with a spoon, and my mom couldn't do that because she couldn't see.
Right.
So Grandma came down to help, and she just stayed with us. And we had a ball. She took us shopping, read to us. She did so much for us kids and for my mom. And we grew up a very happy family. My father was a musician, and I became a musician. And he played piano and trumpet and organ, and he played accordion enough to teach me how. And I took piano and organ in school. My sister had a wonderful voice. She sang. And we would have jam sessions and all kinds of neat stuff. My mom would make popcorn for us. And we had a great time.
Yeah, and a life worth living.
Yeah, and we went places together as a family. My parents belonged to what was called the Badger Association for the Blind, and every 2 months they would have dances, and the whole family would go together.
Oh, that's great.
And I had a wonderful family life. I couldn't have asked for more. And very understanding parents. They really cared about us and taught us well.
And could relate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is important. Yeah, yeah, because I'll tell you.
One of the rules.
When you got the wrong set of parents, it can be sheer misery. But that's terrific.
Oh,
when,
I went to school. Yeah,
probably.
I went to school with girls and with kids who their parents were overprotective. And, oh, man, when they got to school, they had a terrible time. One of the rules was that when we grew up and graduated, we were to make damn sure we got jobs. My dad didn't.
Good.
He worked 3 jobs, and all. My mom worked for a little while. He did not want us not going out and supporting ourselves. That was one of the rules. We had to do that, and we did.
No, that's wonderful, and you're right. The overprotection is just really sad. But worse than that, I have had friends whose their parents literally abused them physically when they were young. They were just not going to deal with it. You know, it's like, I don't know why you're blind, but I'm not going to deal with it. And I thought it was just terrible. And, you know, I won't mention any names, but I had one in particular. Sadly, he's gone now. He died of a heart attack. But man, his mother was just horrible to him, and it absolutely affected him later in life.
Oh, man. I remember one girl especially who I knew because our parents knew each other. They lived in the area. In fact, my mom had graduated from Superior's Teachers College before she got married. And she homeschooled this little girl for a while, and then eventually, of course, we got to know her, and she came to school at Janesville. She was totally lost, and I felt so sorry for her. I used to take her back and forth to the dormitory and to class and, you know, doing anywhere I could help her, I would try to help her. And I felt so sorry for her. And they finally took her out of school because the parents, being so overprotected, felt that she was being mistreated at school.
Right. No, it's good that someone's stepping in, because statistically, unfortunately, children with disabilities, particularly blindness, but some other disabilities as well, are more prone to abuse from parents overall. And it's just unconscionable, but it's what it is. So it's nice when those signs can be recognized and there can be some intercession in that.
Yeah, I don't know. Because of the life I had and because of the situation I was in, I find it so hard to believe when people say, oh, well, totally blind people can't raise families.
Oh, yeah, right.
How could your mother know when you were doing something wrong? Well, I'll tell you what. Mothers know that stuff. And if she called me and said, Karen, I want you to do something, no big deal. But if she said, Karen Jean, well, time to run for the hills, guys. Ah. She knows.
No, well, absolutely. But that's just ignorance to such a degree. And, you know, I've mentioned many times when I've been out at lunch with a blind friend and the waitress will say, well, what is he having? Well, I don't know. Ask him. You know, I mean, that stuff is just ridiculous, what you see. And
I had a friend. I was going to visit my girlfriend in Cincinnati one time, and he was a friend of my husband, and he took me to the Greyhound station to buy my ticket, and the agent said, where is she going, and what time does she want to leave? And he said, hell, I don't know. I'm staying here.
Right, good for you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I loved it. I laughed so hard I couldn't help it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it's just absolute, abject ignorance. And it's one of those things that really needs to be more highlighted in society because it's just ridiculous.
You know, another one that my sister just had no patience. She was kind of short-tempered on occasion, and she just hated ignorance or stupidity. Whenever one time she and I went downtown together shopping, and we had a favorite dress shop we used to go to, and we were walking down to, I forget where we were, and the lady walked up to Judy, and she said, hello, Judy. And she's talking. She said, do you know who I am? And Judy said, no, but I hope you do.
Good for you.
Yeah. Judy, when you come up, she just would not tolerate it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just unfortunate all the way around. But, you know, it's the human condition. But you obviously have triumphed, and a good early background helps with that. But overall, it comes down to your character, and you're doing great.
It was my mom and dad that gave me that, and I always followed my dad around. I wanted to learn how to fix things, and he did things in his workshop. I was totally fascinated by it, and my sister, she was the other way. She wanted to have a family and deal with, you know, we were just two opposite, but we were like best friends. We were inseparable.
That's great. Absolutely great. All right. Well, I'm so glad you called, and I'm glad you're talking to Jim, and you call us anytime. Love to hear from you.
Yeah. Thank you for getting me acquainted with Jim. He is just fantastic. I enjoy talking to him.
Excellent. Well, good deal. All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
And you too. And thank you, Raleigh, for taking my call.
Always.
I enjoy your show.
Thanks. Appreciate that. All right. So let's see. As usual, we're running out of time. I'm talking too much. Tomorrow night is an absolutely full show, 3 big hours, and we can talk about anything you want, but we'll try to hopefully. I think we say goodbye to Mark and Aurora, so let me drop that. All right. And, James and Chris have been waiting a really long time, so we'll get there, and I hope we'll get to Eduardo and Tam. Well, we'll see. On WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. We'll forego the bumper because time is marching on, and let us see what is happening to James on the south side. Welcome back to WGN Radio, James.
How are you?
Thank you
for taking my...
Always, always. Thanks for all the lovely links.
Okay, I sent you a couple ones I thought were potential question ones.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't do much with the vending machines because it's a well-known one, but it's so much fun to talk about that it is hard to believe that vending machines kill more than sharks.
Yeah, so you got a chance to talk about
that. Oh, yeah, talked about that at length, yes. And let's face it, we've all wanted to rattle those darn machines when our item doesn't, you know, fall to the bottom from the coil. But it's amazing that in fact, enough people have done it for 2 deaths a year.
Yes, and and then there's, the parenting one where they said that, it wasn't because of better parenting, at least the psychologist was saying, but that enough what you call benign neglect that's allowed to be.
Yeah,
so that was a good one.
But I particularly like the surprising ways toilets have killed people.
Oh, and, film of death.
Who would have ever thought that statistically the toilet is one of the most dangerous pieces of equipment in your home?
Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't have thought that. I was kind of shocked, and then I thought, you know, maybe shouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, you know, all these people who want to find ways to prevent things, I guess the only way to prevent this is to make sure homes don't have bathrooms. There are 40,000 toilet-related injuries every year. And, of course, we know about Elvis and all that. But the kitchen gets the reputation, you know, the knives and the flames and all that. But apparently the bathroom is the real hazard. And
yes.
I can see that. A hard tile floor, wet surfaces, you know, getting up and down, yeah. You know, if you've got a bathtub, getting in it. So, yeah, I can see that would happen. You know, the things we never think about. For instance, I had no idea there were deaths from babies drowning in toilet bowls. Now, what I want to know is, where is the parent?
Yeah, although, unfortunately, not direct experience, but from talking to somebody who does have direct, where a child actually went, lifted up the bowl and cup, was playing in it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Where are the parents or the caregiver? You know, it's just like all the warnings on medicines and everything else they have. It's like, well, if you have a parent in the room, the kid's not going to get this.
But of course, thankfully, this kid's so big that he can't really get it.
right, exactly. He couldn't flush himself down. Well, that's good to hear. So, So I found that out, and I'm not going to go over the other thing about straining killing you, but I'll let other people read the fact that the toilet can, in fact, kill you. Use your imagination. Now, beer making you attracted to mosquitoes. You know, I've always heard that, but I've yet to have any beer, and no one is more attractive to mosquitoes than me. So, I don't know.
And then, of course, there's the missing persons from the wall.
Right.
From the wall, yeah, which, okay, I was kind of shocked when I said, hey, I didn't hear about this little mishap at sea.
Yeah.
Basically completely demolished a destroyer in the process.
Yes, yes. So there you go. Always a fine group of links. And yes, thank me the one. I'm probably going to try to find a way to use it. I know the answer, but that doesn't mean everybody else will. So thank you for that.
Okay. So. Hopefully a couple of these other ones you might be able to use.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about that. But they're fun to talk about anyway, including Walt Disney being cryogenically frozen. A lot of talk about that. So we'll get to the facts on that. Thanks to you. And it's always good to hear from you.
Okay. You take care.
All right,
okay,
you too. Thanks. All right. So.
I did have that 12/19 where it phased out. Actually, yeah. I've had it phased out on you a couple of times.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll tell you, we've checked our streams, and our connection is solid. So it can either be the codec or something else at the other end. But I don't know. Our connection was solid. All right. Thanks. Appreciate
it. I was glad it didn't go completely, thankfully.
Yes. We're here. All right. Thanks. And we'll be here tomorrow night, 21 hours from now. Thanks to James. All right. So now let us say goodbye to James and see poor Chris. He's been waiting forever. Are you still alive, Chris?
Yes, I'm still alive.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. What's up?
Nothing much. You said Walt Disney died because he was cryogenically frozen.
No. He didn't die from that. It's after he died. There's a lot of stories about that they did cryogenically freeze him to preserve him. No, he didn't die from it. So the question is, he died from lung cancer in 1966. And so the reality is that he was not cryogenically frozen. Everybody talked about that, but he was cremated the day afterwards. And so the death certificate shows it. But for what's...
Yeah, one more thing.
Yes.
One more thing. You remember, it's WGN Relay. You remember Nick DiGillo used to be on at midnight before you came?
Yes.
What happened to him?
I
used to entertain as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he was on another, I don't know. But I think there might be something online.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, try that.
Yeah, and I'll call back tomorrow.
Okay,
I'll call early.
I will get to you quicker. Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
You're welcome.
All right. So, and Eduardo, I hope you'll call me tomorrow night, too, because that pretty much is a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. Made it a pleasure to do and looking forward to doing it again soon on WGN Radio.
Forecast Fix Frenzy, plus Ship of Fools, and Flung Food Fighting. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News, real stories, real fun. Heat Hack Hustle, a Paris prediction play turns temperature-twisting trouble. Officials say suspicious spikes at a Charles de Gaulle airport weather sensor may have helped players on prediction market platform Polymarket purloin puffed-up payouts. Wagers on the daily high hit nearly $1.4 million over 2 days, with some scoring tens of thousands. Investigators suspect someone may have warmed the works with hairdryer hijinks to win the wager. They bet on the weather. Now the forecast favors fraud. Scheme boat sillies. Time to abandon quip like brats heaving a stinking ship. Saturday Night Live's Colin Jost and Pete Davidson may have to realize Gaul is lost with their Staten Island ferry fail sponge flop face plant. The Empire State says it should sink their gonzo goondoggle to become an artificial reef, since the jive from New York guys are now up Skits Creek without a payoff. Their bottomless bit is now little more than oh, your boat. Supersize spree, dive through nervous. Girls gone wild at a Wendy's in Trenton, New Jersey at 3 a.m. when the spree stooges went wacko. Climbing through the drive-through window, hurling grub and drinks and sauce in all directions. Nasty curses too. After one of the witches fired her shoe at somebody, she actually screamed she wanted the croc back. Insane clown saucy flew the coop, but the popo have plenty of pics of heels on wheels. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.